The operation occurs from left to right. Cattle trucks arrive on the south side of the property, back all the way into the building. The building is closed, so you never hear any of the cattle. The only thing you're going to hear is the beep, beep, beeping of the trucks as they back up. They empty the trucks into the holding pen, and then they're processed on the inside of the building. Everything goes through the process from the start, including the butchering, and then the preparing of the final products, which are then loaded on the right-hand side at the loading docks. The waste is also collected on the south side of the building, as you can see on the other side. Again, the truck pulls all the way into the back of the building, and the doors are closed so that nothing occurs outside the building. Everything that occurs in this property is enclosed. The sewer system is connected to the MMSD sewer, regional sewer. Water will be connected to the City of Franklin Oak Creek water system. Nothing occurs outside the building except stormwater, which is generated by the impervious coverages that you see here. Again, this is another view. Again, north is now faced upward. There are a couple of wetland areas which are depicted, one on the northwest corner there, one on the near northwest side of the property. Those are protected. Those buffers are depicted, and nothing will be conducted inside those buffers. The property will be developed as such. They also propose expansion areas, which will be covered in a later approval down the road. And this is the south end. You see another wetland area in the southwest corner. That one also is protected, will not be impacted at all. The landscape buffer as proposed is in compliance with the UDO standard requirement. It should be noted also that the property immediately west of here has a woodland protected under the UDO standard for natural resources protections. So there is additional buffering in addition to that which is proposed for planting on this property. There is in addition going to be a landscape berm provided along the north side of the property adjacent to Loomis Road, 6-foot high berm landscaped to essentially provide a visual barrier from the parked vehicles, which are mostly going to be trucks along the north side.
North is on the right on this drawing.
Yes. Yes, thank you. This shows more of the landscaping design on the property as proposed. And this is the front of the building facing, this is the office side facing for employees' entrance. This is the gated entrance for trucks and other delivery and freight vehicles entering and leaving the facility. The dock on the right side, you see the door there, that giant door. That's where the trucks back into the building to deliver cattle. And then on the other side, you see all those dock areas there. That is for trucks to pick up waste and transport it out. Another view of the dock, or the area, the gate. This is a view of the property from Loomis Road, facing into Monarch Drive, looking south into the property. The docks you see there are the finished products docks, where trucks would pick up finished products for delivery. This is another view facing toward the northeast from the backside of the property. The green area is eventual expansion, or as proposed. The docks for delivery are located on the south side on the right. And another rendering further back from the original drawing. There are a couple of masonry walls on the front side. Those are either to protect from door appearances on the south side or along the north side here for the generators that are proposed to be included as the backup electrical system. And another close-up view of the backside on the south dock area. And the holding pen is that area located entirely inside there on the, entirely in the area there. That's it right there. And another view from the front. Staff evaluated this project based on the information provided as well as the available information of the existing infrastructure and services at the city. It's interesting that we brought up the water tower. The water tower has actually been a project that's been in the works for over 10 years now, my understanding. That it's closing tonight is kind of just weird happenstance, but it wasn't something that was related to this project. With regard to the evaluation of standards for special uses, staff evaluated this and determined that the impacts that they would have are manageable within the context of the ordinance itself. That they have high quantity of ammonia on site is natural for any kind of system that employs refrigeration with chemicals, and they're not uncommon for industrial operations. The odor can be managed with the existing systems. These are systems that are also not unfamiliar to the existing operation itself. They know how to do this, so it's not new for them. So with that, staff recommended approval to the Plan Commission for both the special use and the site plan. The Plan Commission, following 2 hours of comments provided by the public, including 58 comments, asked a series of questions of the applicant and discussed issues included in the public comments, and at their discretion voted to recommend approval to the Common Council for the special use, with 20 conditions of approval that are incorporated in the resolution for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Addy. At that Plan Commission hearing, several of us took notes. I took my own notes. I gave my notes, which probably include some 30 questions and issues. I gave them to the applicant. The presentation that I believe we're going to see this evening from the applicant addresses, I would imagine, all of them. I understand that Alderman Nelson has given them a separate list of questions and issues that are also going to be addressed this evening. I'm certain that there's probably other questions that have been given to them by the other aldermen and potentially staff. I know that they as well have taken notes and listened intently to the comments from the people here this evening as well as at the Plan Commission. The common narrative is we're not listening. That's really not true. It's absolutely not true. There is also a narrative that says if you don't vote the way we want you to vote, you're not voting with the majority. That's a trap that elected officials sometimes fall in. If you're not voting the way the people around you are say you should be voting, that's not always the case. It's typically you're not talking to a lot of people. So there are 36,000 people in this city. There are perhaps 150 here today. And so we have to listen to everybody. And we listen to you. So with that, we have Randy Strauss, who is the CEO, truly the CEO of Strauss Brands. We have Don Olson, who is with ESI, the architectural firm. We have Jack Price, who is the operations VP for Strauss, and Jerry Bussin, who is the president of Strauss and chief operating officer, right? I'm destined to make those mistakes. Sorry. Jack, Jerry, Randy, and Don. So with that, I turn it over to Mr. Strauss.
Thank you. Mayor, aldermen, residents of Franklin, these last few weeks have been difficult for all of us. Between these meetings, the fear of the unknown, everyone wants to know what's going on, what's happening in my community. Why is there a processing facility being built in my backyard? What about the smells? What about the traffic? And we hear your voice. We hear the voices of all the people that have come before this committee tonight and 2 weeks ago and at our town hall meeting last week. We have answers to your questions. And hopefully they'll give you some peace of mind that the project we're presenting here is a good project and it's a great project for this community. I want to thank all of you for being here tonight. and again for going to the meeting, our town hall meeting. Those that have driven by our plant, those that have gotten to know us, those that have called to ask the tough questions. Many of you have toured our facility, and I appreciate all that. This month has obviously been difficult for me personally, because I take a lot of pride in what we do. I've always tried to run our company with the highest levels of moral integrity, and I think it's kind of important right now that I share with you who we are as a company and where we've come from. I'm going to take you down a little bit of a history, but I'm going to go fast, so please bear with me. 1937, our company was started. At that time, animals were raised in pastures. That's just how it was done. We're going to cut to post-World War II, and there's a tremendous demand placed on food and meat and agriculture. And at that time, farmers decided that they were going to mass produce livestock. This is what they came up with. They're going to be able to mass produce livestock with limited amounts of labor. And they didn't take in consideration that these animals were sentient beings and that these animals deserved respect. No different than Henry Ford did with the assembly line of production. This was an assembly line for meat. And it allowed a family farm with a husband and a wife and a couple kids to mass produce livestock with a limited amount of labor. So a family can raise hundreds and hundreds of animals, but there was a catch to it. They raised these animals in confinement, and they raised them indoors, and they didn't give these animals rights, and they could basically barely just stand up and lie down, and many of them had chains around their necks. They called this industrialized agriculture. Others called it factory farming. I called it animal abuse. 1987, I started working for our family's business. At that time, my grandfather and my dad had tried to improve the welfare of our animals, but they were met with a tremendous amount of resistance. They did their best. When I started working for the family business, I was reluctant to be a part of it because of what we did, because I didn't feel good about it. I didn't feel good that we were a part of an industry that was not respecting the rights of the animals. In 1989, my dad retired, and it was my business to make a change. And that was my one goal, make a change, make a positive impact, leave a legacy for our family that I can be proud of. So we did the best that we could to try to understand how we can raise animals. We did the best we could to try to understand how to raise livestock with the highest levels of animal welfare. Do you want me to wait?
No.
Okay. So in 2000, in the mid-2000s, like 2005, I made it my personal goal to improve the welfare of our animals, and I traveled around the world. I went to England. I went to France. I went to Italy, I went to the Netherlands, specifically Holland. I went to Australia and I studied systems. I studied the best systems in the world. The ones that like regarded the animal at the highest level of animal welfare. And I brought the best of those systems back home. At that time, our industry was still reluctant to change. It was roughly 2008. I demanded that our company made immediate change, and within 6 months of coming back, we converted to 100% humanely raised products. Our industry was livid, to say the least. I got a lot of threatening messages to retract statements that I made to animal welfare groups. I used the term inhumane and archaic to describe the way systems were and had been. And our industry was so distraught with my words, they begged me to retract them. I wouldn't. Animal welfare groups, and I know there's a lot of them represented here tonight, and I just want to say something about that. I respect their opinion. I do. I respect their beliefs. These animals are making the ultimate sacrifice for human consumption. It's the circle of life. But currently, people eat meat. And if they're going to eat meat, I want to provide it to them with the highest levels of animal welfare. And that's just who we are as a company. That's what we do. You know, so people can say all these terrible things about, you know, slaughterhouses and that we're you know, harming animals, but that's the farthest thing from the truth. Throughout the beginning of this process, our industry tried to distance themselves from our company, and we certainly distanced ourselves from the other companies within our industry. We immediately, as I mentioned, in 2008, converted within 6 months. Our industry made a statement that they would be converted in 10 years. 2018, they gave themselves to do something that only took us 6 months. And you know why they did that? Money. Money. Greed. We lost millions of dollars by doing the right thing. Millions of dollars were left on the table while our competition was making millions of dollars. I can tell you there were times in certain years where I begged the banks to let us run to the end of the year just to see if we can somehow piece this thing together, because we didn't want to go backwards. We became known as leaders in ethical agriculture, doing it right. People began to pay attention. People knew that it was possible. We decided that not only did we want to improve the welfare of the animals that we were already producing, but there needed to be a better system for some of these animals. So at that time, there was no such thing as pasture-raised veal. And we tried for about 2 months to get that approved by the United States Department of Agriculture. It was a definition that didn't exist. And we tried, and finally we were told by the USDA, no, veal must be raised in confinement in the systems that are currently available, and you're going to have to call this a different name. It's not going to be allowed to be called veal. Well, needless to say, I got a little angry. I got the ears of the top people at the United States Department of Agriculture. And personally, after a four-hour heated exchange, we were able to define pasture-raised veal with the United States Department of Agriculture. That didn't exist before. We were the only ones that were brave enough to stand up and get that done. Again, that led us to be known, again, throughout the industry, between chefs and consumers and cruise ships, that we were doing the things the way they were supposed to be done. And that's how we got into grass-fed beef. Beef is another broken system in this country. Beef, the way most people eat it today, are raised in feedlots. Feedlots are industrialized agriculture. I'm not cool with that. So we were determined to bring back beef the way it's supposed to be raised. That means outdoors, no hormones, no antibiotics. The only confinement is literally the stars above. And yep, I get it. These animals are making the ultimate sacrifice. So we owe it to them to treat them with the dignity they deserve. And that goes within our facility as well. In our facility, we have signs all over our plant so that everyone that works in our building understands that we're not working with widgets, that we're working with animals. And the signs read, "We treat our animals with dignity and respect, for they are making the ultimate sacrifice." I say again, as long as people are going to eat meat, we're trying to provide meat that has ethical standards behind it. All right, I'm going to just talk for a moment because some questions have been raised about who owns Strauss. As we continue to grow, we have outgrown our current facility. We've talked about that a lot in these meetings. We need a new facility. Our facility has been, you know, bandaged and band-aided and added on to over the almost 50 years of being there, and it's time for a new state-of-the-art facility to take us to the next generation. So we needed growth capital. Unfortunately, our family could not afford to take it to the next level. So reluctantly, we went out on the market and we found partners. And they've provided us with growth capital. And they, yes, are out of Texas. And they let us manage our business. I'm the CEO, Jerry's the president, Jack's the COO, we run the business. We report to Insight, but they are a hands-off owner, and my brother and I still have significant ownership in the company. It's my single biggest investment. It's my passion. My son works for our family's business. He manages our barn. He loves what he does. He's proud to be part of our family's fourth generation in our business. I'll leave you with this. If history is a good indicator for the future, we'll manage our new facility as we've done with our old without incident. We didn't have an incident. I mean, we've looked, people have searched, everyone's digging around. What did Strauss do wrong? The question has been brought up over and over again. Well, they're not even doing in the old facility what they're going to be doing in the new. That's simply not true. We've been slaughtering animals since 1972. We do want to continue to be a part of Franklin. It's our home, just like it's the home of so many that have shown up to express their concerns. We have the answers tonight. We're going to go into depth. If you have any more questions, please feel free to answer them. We hope you'll be proud to have us in your community.
So thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Common Council. Thanks, Randy. So as Randy noted, you know, we are leaders in, you know, the implementation of ethical, humane, and sustainable agriculture. And that's one of the reasons that we serve many grocers and restaurants in the area, because they know us to be the best in the industry. I do want to note that we support over 50 farms and ranches in the state, many of which we converted from old raising practices where they may have been in a feedlot system, and we convinced them that, you know, they should be pasture raised, pasture finished, and you know, that's one of our number one goals in the industry, is to slowly change. You know, we won't get all of the United States, but it'd be great to, you know, have a higher percentage than just a few percentage points for beef.
Mr. Bussin. This is Jerry Bussin, President.
Oh, sorry, I'm Jerry Bussin, President of Strauss. So I want to get a bit into the project. There's been a lot of questions in relation to job creation. I do want to note that we currently have roughly 150 jobs in our existing facility. The plan with this expansion is to add 110 by the end of 2022. And then with our growth plans through 2025, we're going to add 160 total. So that would bring the job counts in the new facility to 310. I want to note that the average income of these employees is expected to be $54,000 annually, plus a very strong benefit package. And this average is in line with what you see across the industry. And I would argue that, you know, these are family supporting jobs. And as you can see on the slide, some of the jobs include, you know, skilled production line leaders, skilled craftsmen in the butcher and meat cutting trades. Guys are operating meat cutters, saws, they're trimming on boning lines. We have technicians that work in our QA department. We have certified journeyman maintenance crew, skilled machine operators, and then also our shipping and receiving team. And I also want to note, it's been brought up that, you know, many employees don't live in Franklin. Well, you don't necessarily have to be a Franklin resident to have an impact on the economy. You know, so if we have 310 total employees at the site, you know, they shop here locally on their way home. They fuel at convenience stores. They go to convenience stores. They stop at the Hideaway for a beer before they go home. You know, so they're spending money and definitely having an economic impact in the area. And in addition to the 160 total jobs that we'll create that will be union jobs, it's expected that we're going to have at least 5 additional employees in plant management. These jobs are expected to, you know, pay anywhere from $100,000 to $175,000 a year. You know, they'll be in professional and administrative roles throughout the company. So currently we have approximately 90 professionals within the organization that cover the areas on the slide, to sales, customer service, finance and accounting, IT, supply chain, production, logistics management, and administrative support. One of our goals with this new facility, and we've started the process already, is we've started working with the Franklin School System. I know that they are starting an internship program. Our goal in the areas of finance, marketing, supply chain, is we will pull those students to do internships, you know, as we grow, because we definitely have a need for that. And it's likely we may pull from Muskego as well. I know it's not Franklin, but we need a lot of interns, and we'll pull as many students as we can. So total budget for the project is $73 million. $61 million of this is for building infrastructure, and an estimated $12 million for equipment. We do have a Wisconsin-based contractor designing and providing oversight of the construction. And I do want to note a significant amount of the trades is going to be from the southeastern Wisconsin region. So that includes site work, asphalt, utilities, concrete, plumbing, office finishes, fire protection, HVAC, and electrical. Before we go to the traffic plan, I do want to answer some specific questions that were sent to me by a few aldermen, alderwomen. I do appreciate those. It may cover some of the odor issues and other areas that Don will provide specific details to, but I do want to provide the answers that we provided directly to constituents and the Common Council. So there's been a lot of questions in regards to water pollution. You know, I do want to note that, as most of you know, we've been working with MMSD for, you know, well over 12 months. Right at the start of the project, we said, "Hey, we're gonna use more water potentially. We may want to look at pretreatment." Don's team reached out to MMSD, and we immediately started designing a pretreatment plant. So that pretreatment component of our facility will treat the water to ensure that it is not including, it's not providing additional contaminants to MMSD, where they will provide the final treatment, and then we'll put it into its final destination, which is Lake Michigan. I do want to note that our new numbers versus the old facility will be significantly reduced, because in our current facility, we do not have a wastewater treatment system. There's been questions that have arisen from, you know, green gas emissions, electricity use, et cetera. Again, I want to note, this is going to be a new state-of-the-art facility. We actually engaged McKinstry, which is one of their specialties is energy conservation. So where available, we are going to, you know, put in LED lighting. We'll put in motor controls to ensure that, you know, we're not operating them 24/7, you know, start, stop, just to ensure that we're conserving water and electricity. There's a question brought about trucks. So our truck traffic is going to be very similar to our existing facility. So our existing facility was designed to handle, you know, 3,500 to 4,000 fuel calves a week. And we, at times, will bring up upwards of 500 head a day in present day terms. So that converts to 6 trucks a day. When we initially start up this new facility, we will bring in 6 trucks a day. And I know that there's been concerns that individuals don't want to see livestock going down the road. Well, we've been hauling 6 to 12 trucks a day, depending on the decade, for the past 50 years, and most people weren't aware. It's because we do it in the wee hours of the morning. We're very good at ensuring that our truck drivers, you know, don't make additional noise. You know, they're not using their transmission to brake, which you'll hear a lot on the highway. So we've done a great job of not being known that we're here. And then in regards to odor, you know, I want to note that I live within a few miles of this development.
Mr. Buston, since we're talking about trucks, we hear a lot about, how do I delicately put this? The cattle remnants from the trucks on the roadway.
Yeah, I know that was a concern, but I've never heard of that being an issue. If it was an issue, I would imagine we would have had a complaint about it with the amount of trucks that we bring in today. Jack, I don't know if you have any additional color on.
Yeah, the per USDA requirements, the trucks are adequately bedded with sawdust and straw. So when you talk about any kind of urine or feces, it's all going to be absorbed in the straw in the bedding. So you will not, you don't have a truck that's running down the road like leaking.
Wasn't my question, it was a question of constituents.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry. And then in regards to odor, like I said, I live within a few miles of the development. So an odor is also a big personal concern of mine. It's something that I brought up when we started initially designing the building. I do apologize, there was a bit of confusion when ozone was brought up. it didn't seem like ESI and Strauss was on the same page. I think it's because they were going down a different route to install air scrubbers and felt that that would be adequate for odor mitigation. We went back to the drawing table and said, no, that's not going to be enough. We need to put the air scrubbers in the pretreatment room. We need to look at all exhaust fans that could potentially vent air that has an obnoxious odor, and we're gonna install ozone systems on those fans to eliminate 99 plus percent of the odors being emitted. And then back to the concern of property values. I understand the concern, but I also don't get how it's a concern. You know, we've operated a facility in the middle of the city, or operated a facility in the middle of the city for 50 years, doing upwards of 3,500 to 4,000 calves a week, and it's never impacted anyone's property values. And I think that we've done a really good job of not being known, and I feel that we're going to do exactly the same thing in our new facility, and if history is a good indicator of the future, you know, we're not going to have an impact. So at our peak, we would do 3,500 to 4,000 a week.
A day, seven divided by seven. Because you said 500 head a day.
So those are current numbers.
Okay.
So if you go back to the 70s and 80s, where it was primarily just veal, and the industry was a bit different, we didn't have to utilize our building for as much processing. We just harvested, cut them into eight pieces, and sent them on. As the industry has changed, we've decreased our numbers over time.